everyone. I'm Emily.
And I'm Vince.
And this is The Lighthouse Lowdown. Nice little, what was it? What is it called when you do that?
I don't know. Like jazz hands, like, or something?
Yeah, I was thinking like Starburst or something.
Could be. Is it a dancing term?
No.
From the lightning dancers?
That's what I'll call it. Don't talk about my past.
No, we don't want to talk about that.
All right, I used to be a dancer, people drill team, like, Texas football, and now we're here.
And they were called the Lightning Dancers.
Yeah, everyone was rude. So I changed to bowling, and now I'm just a nerd.
Now she's mine.
Nerd, and with damaged hamstrings from all the splits that I couldn't do, but did anyway. Really painful.
Well, you made it, and that was probably helpful in bowling.
What, having stiff hamstrings?
Yeah, probably not, but... I tried.
Anyway. So I'll go into our history buoy. I have one.
Yeah, let's go. Oh, wait. Hold on.
We have Vince back on the sound effects.
Back on the mic.
Okay, excuse me. That went on far too long.
The crowd was out of control. Imagine if we had a live audience.
Ugh, it'd be terrible. Well, we're going to. Vince and I have been accepted to do a presentation at the Osher Institute in spring. Public speaking.
Osher, O-S-H-E-R.
Oh, did I say OSHA?
No, you said Osher. Oh. I'm just telling the fans. If you want to come see us talk live for the first time ever, it's through the Osher Institute.
You have to be a part of it.
I think it's related to Boise State University. I'm actually not sure.
They're everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's really great.
So, but yeah, it'll be at Boise.
I'm excited.
I'm less than excited.
We have to get Lighthouse print suits to wear.
Suits. Wow.
Absolutely. Can you imagine?
I wouldn't want to set that tone for our presentation. History Buoy is going to be about the light list.
The light list.
During our Whitefish Point episode, we were talking, like, questioning how mariners knew what kind of changes came up with navigational aids.
How do they stay updated?
And we promptly, the day of publication, promptly got a response from Ralph, who told us the answer to that question.
Let's go, Ralph.
That is the light list. That's the name, the light list. And it's been updated for centuries. So this has been going on since we've had navigational aids. Nowadays, it's officially the U.S. Coast Guard light list, which is in a digital format, and they update that daily, which I think is crazy. And has over 40,000 navigational aids, also called ATONs, A-T-O-N,
okay,
in the Northeast alone. So, like, they have it split up by region. And just in that one digital file, there's 40,000. I'm like, in this day and age.
So 40,000...
buoys, lighthouses, foghorns.
And this is a description of how the flash pattern is?
I'll show an example. Why is this not working?
The light list.
So I'll show an example. But yeah, it's like their location, what their light characteristic is, their signal patterns, which this is not how I want it. There's no way to make this... Here we go. That's how I like it.
I think your cable is unhooked on the side towards the boom.
What?
See the hook?
Oh.
Where there's no string on it?
Okay.
On the bottom?
Oh.
It helps it to balance. Yeah.
Why are they all off?
I'm not sure.
Just pick some random.
This one's off too.
Pick some random ones here. Maybe it's because we treat them so poorly.
Yeah, if anyone wants to sponsor us.
So we can get better equipment, though.
We could go for an update on our equipment. Specifically, Rode, Sennheiser, Bose.
You know, the good stuff.
Any Skull Candy, I don't care.
Skull Candy, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, they're still out there. So, okay. I've taken us off track.
I did it with this. The list has light characteristics and signal patterns, so you can take a look at it and find out if the buoy you're approaching is like a very specific one.
Cool. That's awesome.
And mariners use this list along with nautical charts and local notices to mariners, which is another thing that's updated regularly, also called LNMs.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, sorry.
To find the way around. And that's that. So originally, these notices would be published in newspapers, and so that it would be like a blurb, just a little paragraph that's like, hey, this buoy is out because of a storm, or this lighthouse is damaged, or this foghorn's not working, or they changed the light to this, or they're painting this one, you know, just like weekly or daily. I don't think it's daily. Probably if it's in the newspaper.
Just in the newspaper?
Yeah.
It used to be daily, a lot of places. Mm. I think some smaller towns had less than... And daily, it was a big deal, like in the city, they had the daily news.
Yeah, true. Yeah, so just, I guess, whenever, and you just hope that you had the updated information. But I looked on the light list on the Coast Guard website. Yeah. I guess where I found it is the Navigational Center in the Coast Guard website, which is linked in our show notes if anybody's interested in scrolling through hundreds of pages of navigational buoys.
I like that idea.
And so I pulled up just a screen grab of part of one page. So it just has various information. You can see the light characteristic that we're familiar with on there. And it's latitude, longitude, the name, and each one is assigned a number, obviously, from 1 to 40,000 for Northeast.
Yeah, so that's thousands of entries.
Yeah, thousands. I'm sure...
Hundreds of thousands?
Hundreds of thousands. I didn't look at all how many are in each region, but Northeast is a pretty popular...
Right.
Yeah, navigational era. So.
Lots of lighthouses.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Lots of lighthouses, lots of buoys.
Very cool. Thank you.
So originally, these were updated by local superintendents and then by the U.S. Lighthouse Board and now by the Coast Guard. So I thought I saw that it was updated weekly, and then I saw that it said it was updated every 24 hours. So, and then they have an annual one that they publish every year. So, lots of ways to stay informed.
Do you know, is that publish meant a like a book, or is it online only?
I think
or,
it's only digital now.
Probably, to stay up to date.
Yeah, it used to not be. I mean, obviously, but like... Even in recent years, it used to not be just digital, but now I think it's only digital.
Cool.
It's a lot of paper. So.
Yeah, thousands and thousands. Really cool.
And we'll move on to our lighthouse today. After that little bit of information, the little bits, we have a listener lighthouse lined up. So thank you for sending this one on. Travis.
Travis.
Thank you for sending this in. I mentioned how we talked about this in our Whitefish episode. Whitefish Point. And so speaking of, we're heading back to the same area, Shipwreck Coast on Lake Superior.
I'm actually not sure where Shipwreck Coast is at.
We covered it in our Whitefish Point episode. So go back and have a listen for all the juicy deets. But I think long story short is that it's where most shipwrecks happen in Lake Superior.
Sure. Well, it's funny. I remember the graveyard of the Pacific. Is the Outer Banks area, the Atlantic, and the graveyard of the Pacific is near that big inlet.
Oh,
Cape Disappointment is over there.
Yeah, with Victoria's.
That's up north.
Oh,
what's the big river?
But yeah, that you covered in Cape Disappointment. That's
Columbia River, the bar. So, anyways,
I guess Terrible Tilly's over there too.
Oh yeah, Terrible Tilly.
So yeah, I guess there's one for every body of water. So we got one for our Great Lakes over here. So in 1876, four life-saving stations were built along this shipwreck coast, which is kind of crazy. Like four just along this.
All in one year?
I'm pretty sure they said it was like 70 miles, which I guess is a lot. But yeah, all in one year. It was Vermilion, Crisps Point, Two Heart River and Deer Park life-saving stations, and that's from east to west. So Crisps Point was originally called Station Number 10, which would have been easier for me to say, but was later named after the second keeper of the life-saving station, Christopher Crisp, who served from 1878 to 1890. So pretty big stint doing some life-saving duties. So then they renamed it to Crisps Point. And then they, like, over time, it was like Crisps, like, ownership. Crisp,
yeah.
Apostrophe.
With a C?
Crisp. Yeah, like a crisp.
Crisp.
Something crispy. And then they removed the apostrophe. You know how over time stuff just loses its
right
detail.
Someone spells it wrong.
Yeah. So it lost its apostrophe, and now it's lost the S on the end, so it's just Crisp Point.
Which is also kind of hard to say.
But a little bit easier than Crisps Point.
Yeah, it's like saying wasps.
Yeah.
Wasps. Very good.
So, but Christopher Crisp is a fun name.
It is. I agree with that.
And I think this may be one of the first lighthouses that we've covered, or that at least that I've known that they had a life-saving station before they had a lighthouse. In 1896, so that's 20 years after the life-saving stations were built, mm-hmm. the Lighthouse Board first requested a lighthouse on this point, saying, quote, "This is a dangerous point for vessels bound down the lake in thick weather. These vessels all try to make Whitefish Point, but a slight variation in their course from the nearest point of departure will run them ashore near Crisp's Point. Several wrecks have occurred here," end quote.
Dang.
And they repeated this request until 1902, when Congress appropriated $18,000 for a lighthouse and a fog signal.
Six years. Was it 16?
Oh, here's the location.
Oh, yeah. So, can I take a second to look at it?
Sure. And my little blown up image is just to show how, what's it called? Like, secluded it is.
Yeah, there's nothing there.
Wildlife reserve. Never built any, like, big cities or anything.
I bet it's gorgeous. In the summer.
Yeah, yeah. In the winter, it's probably pretty scary.
So it's on the south coast of, is this Lake Superior? I actually don't know.
Yeah, Lake Superior is the, yeah.
Very cool.
So it can, you know, it continues yeah. all the way down. So
ultra green. Upper.
But I had never seen the clipping set up to where you could see every year how they submit the exact same information.
No, I've never seen that.
Waiting for the lighthouse to be approved. And so they each year they add, it says, like, the following recommendation made in the board's annual report is renewed. And then the next one says, the following recommendation made in the board's last two annual reports is renewed. And it goes on, the last three, the last four, the last five. So
it grows in length, it looks like. Or is that just at first glance?
I think the first one was a little bit longer, and then they just kept the important points.
Sure.
And then here is whenever it was approved. So it's just like a little blurb about how much money and everything. So
that's so funny.
I know. I'd never seen it all put together like that. And
No. We've
read it a couple times where they're like, hey, they repeat this request every year, and then it gets, like, they allow it. But I'm like, what does that actually look like? I think we even talked about it. Like, every time you ask for it, do you just copy and paste the same thing you sent right. last year? And you do.
Try to make a better argument. They're like, yeah, no.
Yeah, like, I don't know at this point.
I already asked for this for Christmas.
So, yeah. So, we got accepted in 1902, $18,000. And the lighthouse was a 58-foot tall brick circular white tower, a classic that flares out to the octagonal black lantern room. So, cool. It's like, you know, a cone, but then it flares out again, which is kind of special.
Sounds classy.
It has a keeper's duplex for the principal and first assistant, and what I would describe as a standalone studio apartment for the second assistant, which by my calculations was only 168 square feet. One
what?
Room, and that's it.
That is small.
It's like 16 by, you know, whatever, 10 feet or something, like some variation of that.
I don't think you could do anything but sleep.
Honestly, that's why I'm like, that's crazy.
It's like a shed.
It's kind of far. Exactly. It looked like a little shed. So I pulled up a picture. They got a really nice duplex set up there. And there's a chance that this little house in the background is.
This is a classy spread.
Yeah.
This is a classy spread here. I like this. First off, lighthouse and I think the oil house probably.
The service room.
The service room.
Which was added later. Wasn't there at first.
They're in the perfect shape of an L.
Oh my gosh. Lighthouse lowdown.
Which you may notice that's our symbol. and also the house is a classy bitch too.
Classy.
I don't know what it is. Just looking at it. It's got, what's it called?
Chimneys?
No, the thing over the window.
I won't know.
Yeah, it's eluding me now, but there's a thing that's structural when you have brick.
Like a big stone over goes, the front top. Well,
sometimes you use a beam or a piece of iron in modern construction, and it carries the load of the bricks around the window opening. And these are made of what looks like limestone.
Yeah.
Really nice look, contrasting the darker.
And the outdoor porches are nice. Surround. It's very evenly, very symmetrical, straight down the front. So
I like it. Is it for sales on Zillow?
It's raised. So
shoot.
So anyway, 58 foot tall, white, pretty nice.
Very nice tower.
Unless you're the second assistant, and
then you get a little tiny room.
It's maybe not so nice. You better be a single man, otherwise
put you under the stairs.
When the first head keeper moved in late April 1904, when they finished construction, the floors to the duplex were not in yet when he moved in. They didn't have the floors done. And he wrote in the logbook, quote, "I took charge of the station today at 10:30 and found the station in good condition, or as good as can be expected under the circumstances. As the floors of the dwelling are not finished, decided to live for the present in the workmen's quarters. Oh. Captain Hunter of Number 10 Station has shown every kindness possible and gave a very cordial welcome," end quote. So the life-saving station and the keepers appear to be in good standing, which is nice.
Even with no floors. You'd think the floor, what do you mean it's not done? Like,
yeah, it's like,
can you see the structure below?
Like, unlivable.
Are you
like,
missing floorboards?
Right. Like, is it that you cannot go into the house? Because otherwise, why would you? Like, live in a service room.
I open the door and there's no floor. Anyhow, that's interesting, living in the service room.
And, well, I mean, like, they finished it within the year. So it was just like when he moved there. The station is open from what I think is May to November. So the rest of the time it's so snowy that it doesn't matter. You know, like, the lake's frozen. They just close the lighthouse. And so they tend to get there early before the light has to be turned on because there's so much to do before the station comes back on. So I think that's kind of what happened here is he showed up really early and was like, okay, well, they're not quite done.
I've never thought about that before.
Yeah, because they even said construction stopped in like December or something.
They just couldn't do
it.
And
they were like, oh, we were so close, but the season's over. And so we have to just come back in a few months to finish adding floors.
I know that's what we're doing now, but I'd be really interested to hear some more history on like coming to the station, even let's say after it's built and fully established a couple years later.
Yeah.
For a seasonal deployment, you come out and you're commissioning a lighthouse. So you have to get the light working, the mechanics like going, repair things, all before starting. And then as the normal story that we know is that it's so much work to maintain a lighthouse and grounds.
So I can imagine what kind of preparation is involved after it being like totally unattended, frozen for months.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's pretty
Never
cool.
thought about that.
After they got a confirmation from Whitefish Point, the solid red fourth order Fresnel lens was lit May 5th, 1904. So it's kind of fun that they have to like communicate with other lighthouses like, am I good to turn on?
I'm on.
So cute and fresh. A service building was built and connected to the tower by a short walkway, which we have seen.
It's nice.
On our screen here. It's very classic.
Classy.
It's just like, you know, Currituck and Body Island and all that. Mm-hmm. So I've always liked them. Especially in the early 1900s, for a light to not have one in the first place and then add one, you know? Like, was it easier?
I think it makes it easier.
To build the lighthouse and then build an add-on?
Well, and all these construction projects to build a lighthouse, they never go smooth.
Yeah.
What was the one, Ebsecan Light, where they had dewatering and they had to, build train tracks just to get materials there? All that is to say, there's all these stories where it's enough to get the project going and the lighthouse running. And then I bet you they'd be like, well, it'd be nice if our oil storage was closer to the lighthouse.
Connected.
So we don't have to carry it as far. So it's more accessible. What about a storm? So I think these are additions that are really useful and common, but they're not always included in that first construction.
Yeah.
Also like the cost.
Get it up, get it started, and then you can start worrying about other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. But at the same time they added this, they added 750 feet of cement walkway and a landing crib. So just to make it easier to get around, which I can understand that.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. So this was a little bit later on, but you can see they had some of those groins that I talked about in a past episode.
Yeah, for erosion, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. So they had a big problem with that too, but it wasn't talked about too much. It was just like a keeper's wife that I'm going to talk about here in a second. She purchased, no, I don't know how many. I think it was like 34 of this coastline or like maybe 24. It was either 24 or 34. Huh. And by the time they retired, it had been reduced to like 11.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because of erosion. So there is a big problem all the way around.
So let's remind some listeners who weren't there for the first, I think we talked about on Martha's Vineyard, if I recall, we talked about these groin, right?
No, Martha's Vineyard was a long time ago. I thought I talked about them at Whitefish Point, which I guess would make sense.
Oh, it might have been.
Yeah, because same area.
So it's like a pier made of riprap.
Yeah, they're like wooden piles, basically, that just go out into the ocean.
Staked into the ground, into the water, into the sediment.
It's just supposed to break up, I think, the impact of the waves coming in so they don't, you know, they don't suck out quite as much sand and, you know, mess everything up.
And this photo we're looking at now shows kind of the aerial view with six of those, I can see. It looks like six of those groins.
Yeah.
And the space where the lighthouse and the site is constructed is kind of out away from the trees in the only beach that's visible. So I bet you that was the concern is, this little elbow that we're on is going to be gone.
Yeah, and they have some walls built up trying to, you know, stop all that erosion. So
cool.
It's definitely a problem, but it's still, the lighthouse itself is still standing today, but I'm pretty sure if you look at photos, it's like right on the edge.
So shame.
But even with these updates, like adding all the walkways and the landing crib and everything, it was still really difficult to get to the station at all. And, you know, you and I just looked at the picture. If anybody's watching our YouTube channel, it's like, even today, it is in the middle of nowhere. It's in a wildlife reserve. So there's absolutely there's like one road that goes to it. Since they relit in May, I think, they would have to come back in April. And even then, everything was still covered in snow.
Cold, yeah.
So in 1933, a newspaper article posted that the first assistant keeper, quote, looks forward to an adventuresome trip to the station, which will be made by driving as far as Eckerman, don't know where that is, taking a stage from there north to Whitefish, and then making a 20-mile snowshoe trip to the Crisp Point Lighthouse.
Oh my gosh.
20 miles, like, to go through all this traveling that it's, like, you drive, you take a stagecoach.
I assume a horse-drawn carriage.
Yeah, and then in the 30s. Snowshoe, 30 miles, 20 miles?
Is that silly to say that they were driving a horse carriage in the 1930s?
Well,
in rural parts,
didn't they have
maybe
cars?
Well, yeah, they had cars, but they weren't that common. No, they weren't very tough. My grandparents, I want to get sidetracked, but just a quick comment. There are stories to be told about early cars. And my grandparents' family, really interesting, in the state of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back to 20 miles on snowshoe.
Like, are you stopping in the middle or no?
I don't know. We did.
How much can a healthy human cover?
I think if you were an athlete, like if you were someone who ran marathons, that type of, like you trained regularly, you could do it in a day. But it would be a long day because an average walking speed is about 3 miles per hour. And that's not snowshoeing. That's walking on.
That's like brisk walking.
Clean pavement. So it would be a full day of endurance if you did it in one.
Yeah.
I've only snowshoed one time. Have you ever done it?
No.
Well, you're not much of a hiker. I was going to say you might like it, but.
Hey. No, I feel like I've snowshoed before. Because we used to visit my aunt and uncle in Monument, Colorado all the time.
Yeah, nice.
And when we were kids. And I feel like we've snowshoed.
At least one time.
Yeah. I've had some experience with it because it's actually kind of hard.
It is. You have to spread your legs.
Yes. You're walking with these giant feet and then like your legs get really tight. Your hips and stuff.
You have to extend like you're walking like a cowboy.
Cowboy.
Ready to pull on those revolvers. But. Anyways,
yeah,
that's
kind of crazy.
Quite the journey.
It's Especially if you had like a wife and kids, like are they with you?
You don't have a wife and kids.
I mean,
snowshoeing 20 miles.
Well,
they come out when the weather's nicer, I bet.
I can tell you, oh, you're so right. They would come a little later. Okay, yeah, I can see that. But I was going to talk about Joseph N. Singleton, who served from 1923 to 1939.
Mm.
So that's a solid, like, over 15 years.
Yeah.
He and his wife, Martha, lived at the lighthouse with their four sons, usually referred to as the lighthouse kids, like, in town and stuff.
Nice.
And the family were well-known trappers, hunters, and fishermen, and Martha was noted as winning a fishing contest 6 miles off the lighthouse in 1939 with a 31-pound trout. I'm like, hell yeah,
that's
Martha.
Awesome. She's like, and I cooked it too.
One year, I just have like some stories from, because they stayed there the longest and, you know.
The lighthouse
anytime,
kids.
Yeah, anytime there are lighthouse kids, there ends up being a ton of stories told because it's like a huge part of how they grew up. And now we're really interested in what that was like. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
we get to hear a lot about it from lighthouse kids. But one of the years, a government construction crew working at Chris Point helped 17-year-old Tom, who was the second oldest of the lighthouse kids, to build a 24-foot fish tug that he named Laugh's Dream. And often Tom had to beach the tug to avoid like all the sudden changes that happened in Lake Superior. Huh. So like he'd go out fishing or whatever with his brothers, and then all of a sudden it would be stormy and he'd have to just beach it. Tom and Jack, who was usually with him, I think it was the older, but I don't know that for sure, I guess. The oldest son.
Yeah.
They would make for Two Hearts Life Saving Station, which was a little bit, I think, was it east? Let me check. Land Chris Point. A little bit west from Chris Point. So
okay.
The closest life saving station that wasn't where they came from. They would aim the tug for that because it's safer to beach where you're going to be rescued. So at least there was far enough to do that. But they would wait until the boat hit bottom before jumping off, holding onto an oar to stay afloat. And then the crew at the life-saving station would come and get them from the water. And on one instance, the keeper of the Two Heart station called the boy's father and said, quote, I wish them damn boys of yours would drown and get it over with. We're tired of pulling them out of the lake. Like, I bet at the time that
was
acceptable.
Why is he quoted? Dad is like, I'm going to write this down.
Just in case, you know?
It's like the bad guys in all of the Scooby-Doo. Those meddling kids.
Yeah.
Goddamn
imagine,
lighthouse
though,
kids.
Like, think about how dramatic these rescues were when we talk about them in life-saving stations. And they have to get in the water. It's probably cold. They're using all this equipment. But it's basically like doing drills over again.
It would be, though, annoying if you're, like, saving the same kids. You're like, come on.
Why do you keep doing this?
And they're like, oh, we'll always be saved.
Like,
well,
you're going to help us every time. So
it's
so just like, I wish
boy.
They would drown. I wish your kids would die.
Ooh, rough.
So. Those are just some fun stories told by Tom himself.
You know what year that was, that last one?
It didn't say.
Didn't say. Sometime in their
sometime in
15
their
years there somewhere.
Before the Coast Guard took over.
Mm.
1939 is when
they
were done. So, but speaking of, Chris Point was electrified and automated in 1941. And so I do think that there was a Coast Guard keeper there for just those 2 years.
Okay.
And then it was automated. 1965, the Coast Guard raised all the buildings on the station aside from the lighthouse and its attached service room.
Mm.
So unfortunately, our duplex is no more, which I'm glad we have a picture of it because it's pretty nice. It's like slightly gothic.
Yeah.
You know?
It also makes sense, like 30 years unattended to.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Coast Guard...
It doesn't serve any navigational purpose, so...
Yeah, once the story goes, right, once the Coast Guard automates a lighthouse, they don't maintain anything except for the light itself, right? So,
and even then, like, usually they're not doing work on the tower. It's just the actual light itself.
Mm, yeah, the beacon or the...
Yeah, and if the light becomes too dangerous to access, then they just put a light off the coast, and that's usually the end of a lighthouse, so... Ohio couple Don and Nellie Ross saw the abandoned lighthouse traveling in 1988 and were immediately taken with it. And they immediately moved to the Upper Peninsula and started the Chris Point Light Historical Society. So it was Love at First Sight, and we've got some serious action taken immediately, which we love those kind of people.
Yeah.
We incredible. Need those people for our lighthouses. The Coast Guard decommissioned the light in 1992, which made it really easy for the society to get a lease in 1994.
Looks good.
Here's a close to current photo. The service room has been rebuilt by this point, and it's got a red roof. So I don't know if this was like before they had finished or something, because in this picture it's black. Since then, the society rebuilt the service room and the Foghorn building and reestablished the light as a private guide to navigation. So I'm pretty sure that means the Coast Guard no longer has anything to do with it.
Unofficial. Yeah.
And what drew me to this lighthouse in the first place was its red cupola, even though the rest of the lantern room is black.
Yeah.
And I can't find if it's always been red or if it was added later, because I was looking at some pictures of it when it was really decrepit, like before they formed the society and everything.
The 80s, maybe?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, the cupola is black. But then I zoomed in and I'm like, it's kind of got a red tint to it. So it was never mentioned before this. And there's no tracking of when this got a red cupola. It might have been from the beginning, but I don't think we've seen anything like that. So
no, red cupola, black lantern body, lantern room and rails. And then we've seen this a couple times, but I really like the flared.
The flared top.
Actual tower. Pretty cool.
Pretty cute.
It's nice that they've taken care of. Someone's taken care of it.
Yeah,
this whole time. And it's a classic lighthouse. You know, it's not like, oh, yeah, the lantern's on the ground over here and that's the tower. And
yeah,
that, like, that happens. This is really nice.
Right.
So you said they painted the roof red on the rebuilt. Oh, there you go.
Pulled up another photo.
Image.
So that's a little bit more current. But yeah, they painted the roof to match the cupola. It's just hard to tell with colors because the history goes back so far. And then when it gets close enough for good documentation, it's old. And so you're like, what did it look like in its heyday when everything was in black and white or, you know, sepia?
Yeah. Yeah, you can't always, especially color photos.
Yeah.
The erosion plan has changed. Looks like they do some riprap.
Yeah, but see how close it is?
Yeah, there's not much land left.
Like before, we had this little outcropping, and sure enough, it's...
You don't think it's been moved, right? That wasn't in the history?
No, it hasn't.
That's a big deal. I would love to hear from someone in the area about that nature. Is it nature preserve?
Wildlife preserve.
Preserve. Because those are different than... I listened
National
to a podcast.
Forest
National Forests
whatever,
it is wilderness.
Like what the terminology is for all of that.
But up here, I bet you there's some really wild stuff because not only is it a preserve that appears large, but it's north and on the lake.
Yeah.
So it can support
different
wildlife.
Yeah. And on top of that, people don't stick around
in
the winter. So things probably take over a lot easily there.
Really cool. So beautiful.
Really nice.
I wondered, there must be a road out there today.
Yeah, there's one road, which they put on their website, the Chris Point Historical Society. They have on their website that it's like, you can drive, but then in the winter, this is a snowmobile route, number 8, and no driving when there's snow. So it's just a whole other world that we're not a part of.
I was going to say it'd be a fantastic motorcycle ride, I bet.
Oh, yeah,
on an all-terrain.
Lots of trees.
Yeah, not a Harley, but...
I bet you come by lots of bears or moose.
That's so.
Meese.
Moose. Moose is plural. Mooses? And singular, right?
I think so, yeah. It's like deer.
Yeah.
Deer.
Catch any deers? Yep.
So anyway,
this is really pretty.
Yeah. Nowadays, you can visit the lighthouse between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. any time of year besides the winter, obviously. Right now, they're doing an internal restoration. So they're closed Monday through Thursdays, but still open on the weekends. So
nice.
Come give it a look.
There must be a town not far away, maybe several, you know.
Yeah.
It must be more accessible if people are volunteering out there and keeping it running.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's awesome. Good for them.
Some access. I saw they sent out a newsletter. I don't know how often it is, but the lighthouse sent out a newsletter that had like stuff that happened. So it must be like annual or something, but it was the one that I saw was 2023 and it was called the Crispy Beacon. And then it said underneath, I like my beacon crispy.
Chris Point.
I just died laughing. I was like, the crispy beacon.
I like my beacon crispy.
I mean, I would play into it too. Christopher yeah, why not? Crisp.
So. Chris Cakes.
Yeah.
Crispy Beacons.
It's a cute name for a lighthouse.
Really cool. I don't know that we've ever had that description either of a private aid to navigation. I think that's cool.
We talked about it. We talked about that briefly at the very beginning of our podcast where I was like, what's the difference between a private and a public aid in navigation? And now we know. But at the time, I didn't know. We needed somebody like Ralph in our emails telling us the answers to all of our like brain fart questions.
Mm. Is it Krugler?
Yeah.
Thank you, Ralph Krugler.
For always being our spout of information, which is nice because there's a lot of times that I research history buoys and I'm like, by the time we have to record, I won't be able to find who I need to ask to like really clarify. I'm like, I want to know everything. So it's hard because I'm like, who's the expert on this that I could hunt down that's like, tell me everything there is to know about the light list or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's nice to have people listening that are also knowledgeable on the subject and can point us in the right direction sometimes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's Chris Point Lighthouse. It's Vince's 30th birthday tomorrow, everybody. Ooh. You better hit the little clapping. The end of your 20s. This is your last day in the 20s, which I've heard the 30s are the best decade. Will be the best decade yet.
I am looking forward to my 30s.
Okay.
It's funny thinking about my 20s. Like, 20 was so long ago. And then thinking, you know, that period of time, and the one before that was 10 to 20.
Yeah.
Which, that is what concerns me. Because, like, 10 to 20.
What can change was way in these 10 years way now that longer, we're older?
Way longer than 20 to 30 would be. And, I'm hopeful that life will bring a lot of fun things, 30 to 40.
Yeah, I'll keep you on your toes, Lighthouse Hose.
You know, I heard a...
oh, no, don't go too far. This is supposed to be short.
Well, I'll just keep it to myself then. We appreciate you. And I'll let Emily close us down.
Everybody, check out our website, thelighthouselowdown.com, where you can leave us a review. Nobody ever does, so we're kind of desperate.
5 stars are good.
Maybe nobody's reviewing because they would give us 4 stars, and so they're just helping us out.
That's it. If we get one more 5-star review, I'm doing swag. It's going to happen.
We should do a giveaway.
Well, we have a giveaway ready to go.
That cup has been there for ages, and I want to do a giveaway.
All right. If we get one more 5-star review, if anyone's listening at this time, Mark, one 5-star review,
in.
We're going to do
on.
A giveaway
Come on.
The next episode for a listener.
That's and a then lot of pressure.
There's going to be some swag going on.
Okay, either the following shirts. Episode from the 5-star review.
Yes.
We love a little incentive bonus. So yeah, leave us a review. You can check out our YouTube videos. Those are on there as well.
For real.
And you can listen to our episodes there too, on any platform as well. So...
share it with your mom. She'll love it.
Yeah, we're certain of that part at the very least. And we'll catch you next time on The Lighthouse Lowdown.